Hi, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. Big E here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers, and it's episode 103. Sorry for the change in audio. I am traveling, but I found a case that I really want to talk about with everybody, and it's a case called U.S. versus Zelaya Veliz. It's a published case from the Virginia Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals on February 16th from the Eastern District of Virginia. And a detective reached out to me because he read the case, and he kind of reached out to me and said, is this case as big of a deal as I think it is? And I wrote back to him and said, yeah, you know what? I kind of think it is. This isn't going to be an important case for electronic search warrants for data from Facebook and electronic media companies, but also, I think, for search warrants for digital devices as well. So it's going to be an important case for lots of different law enforcement search warrant inquiries involving electronic evidence. And so because so many cases touch on this, I think we need to stop and sit back and really look at this case. So we're going to dive into the case and sort of take it apart, understand what it's all about, understand what the court ruled, and see if we can take some lessons for the future from it. Obviously, this case is a Fourth Circuit case, and what that means is, at the outset, it's not a case that controls in Virginia. In other words, remember that the Fourth Circuit controls what the federal courts can do, and so certainly it has an extremely important role in if you're going to take a case federal. If you're going to take a case, you know, if it's a child exploitation case or a gang case, drugs, guns, shootings, take that case federal, absolutely Fourth Circuit matters. For Virginia courts, and especially for Virginia magistrates, the Fourth Circuit is informative, but it doesn't control. Nevertheless, over and over again, I think we've seen that Virginia magistrates take and Virginia judges take federal court rulings in the Fourth Circuit very, very seriously. If anybody has tried to do a geofence warrant, you know that a federal district court judge's ruling in the Chatry case has become sort of the controlling authority on geofence warrants, even though that's not even a ruling that's controlling in the Fourth Circuit. It's only controlling in that judge's courtroom, and in particular in that case. So it doesn't even have precedential value, we call it. But nevertheless, it's important. So these kinds of rulings can be really important for us in our cases. So it's worth us talking about. So I want to talk about this case. And it's a case, it's a child exploitation case. And we're going to see that it's going to talk about a couple of really important issues. It's going to talk about what is probable cause to seize data from a internet social media provider like Facebook. What is, and particularly, what is then compliant with the Fourth Amendment's requirement that not only do you have probable cause, but that you particularly describe the place to be searched and particularly describe the persons or things to be seized, right? That language is in the Fourth Amendment itself. It says that no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and particularly describing the persons or things to be seized. So we know that's a key requirement of the Fourth Amendment. How do we do that when we're seizing somebody's entire social media account, which is what happened in this particular case? So And then once we've seized that, can we seize it only for a particular date range, or can we seize the entire account? In other words, does particularity not only describe the kinds of things that I can seize, but is there a requirement that I put a time frame on my seizure? And this is something that I know that lots of people have struggled with all over the Commonwealth. We know that we've seen a lot of magistrates say you have to put a time frame. That is clearly not the law. But, you know, what is the rule about time frames? So this case is going to deal with all of those issues. So let's dive into it. This case starts, and it's a horrible, horrible case. I'm not going to give you all the details of it because they're awful and not necessarily a crucial to our ultimate conclusion here. This is a case that involves a child who's being trafficked for sexual acts by a violent criminal street gang, an MS-13 set. And this child fortunately escapes from their from having been abducted by them and held by them. And the child ultimately makes their way to law enforcement, and the FBI gets involved. As the FBI debriefs this child, they learn that there's multiple children involved in the conspiracy, and the conspiracy has been going on for some time. It's an extended period of time. And, most importantly, that they make contact with the customers, the people that they're selling, and with one another by Facebook. So already we know some pretty crucial things about this case. One, it's important, obviously. But two, it involves lots of different people. It involves at least three different child victims. It involves lots of perpetrators, all of whom are gang members and communicate with one another. They communicate with one another using Facebook, and they also communicate with their customers using Facebook. And the scheme has been going on for a very long time, for at least over a year. And so, and ultimately they discover it's been going on for several years. And so we know it's going to be a wide-ranging search. Already this is important, right? Already this is different than a one-time robbery that happens at 6 p.m. on a Friday at 6, you know, in your at 500 Main Street. We already know that we're going to be looking for a wider range of data, and we're going to have a little more authority to search, right? That's kind of our gut. But what is it that that law enforcement goes after in this case? Well, in this case, law enforcement ultimately seeks four different search warrants from Facebook. And in each one of these cases, they use a two-step procedure under Rule 41 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. So, for example, the first search warrant they obtain is for a handful of Facebook accounts, and they're asking for Facebook to turn over nine categories of information on those five Facebook accounts, including all private communications made or received by those accounts. And the two-step procedure it uses, I think, is really interesting because it's a lot like how sometimes we describe in our search warrants the way that we search phones. What they ask Facebook to do is to turn over essentially the entire Facebook account, all of the data in the Facebook account. And then, once the data is turned over, the search warrant then authorizes the government to go look through that data for information that contains fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of the specific federal criminal violations that they allege in their search warrant. So it's sort of like when we take a phone and we hook it up to a computer and we download it. We get a forensic copy of that phone or a forensic copy of a computer. And then in our search warrant, we're authorized to go look through the data that we downloaded and look through it and find specific pieces of information. Like, okay, I'm only looking for evidence of the crime of robbery, or I'm only looking for evidence of the robbery that happened at 5 p.m. on Friday at 500 Main Street. Or I'm only looking for evidence of drug activity, or I'm only looking for evidence of child exploitation, right? These are the kinds of things that we typically write warrants for, but we have to download the entire phone, right, to do this, to do that search. Here, they're downloading the entire Facebook account in order to do that search similarly. So that's what they do in their first search warrant. And the second search warrant, they go back, ask for eight new Facebook accounts. So we started with five, now we've got eight new Facebook accounts. And these two warrants, these two initial warrants, only are seeking nine categories of information, but it does contain a request for all communications sent to and from the accounts. Any communication at all. Doesn't matter what the communication is, I want everything. But again, it only authorizes the government to find, to look through the data, to find evidence of, or to identify evidence that's fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of these federal sex trafficking allegations. And in these warrants, it's important to know that the government is explaining the entire scope of this criminal conspiracy. The child, what they know from the child who escapes, how long she was exploited, that there's other children, the exploitation is still going on, there's multiple different Facebook accounts, people are using fake names, fake Facebook profiles, fake, you know, they're using pictures of other people, they're using each other's Facebook accounts to facilitate the trafficking, lots of different customers are using Facebook. So they're explaining how this is an ongoing, continuing conspiracy extended over a long period of time. With this information, they then identify more users, and they're starting to narrow down who the perpetrators are. And so they get a third search warrant. Now, what's really interesting about the third and fourth search warrant here versus the first two search warrants is that the first two search warrants only ask for 9 categories of information, but they ask for everything. They don't have a temporal limitation. They don't say we only are going to look through the data to find evidence in 2018 or 2019. They say, I want any evidence of any child sex trafficking activity, just whenever. It could be any time. It could be the year 2000, could be the year 2024, doesn't matter. There's no temporal limitation. Here, when they get to the third search warrant, they're now ordering Facebook to disclose information from January 2018 up until the date of the search warrant, which is, I think, around 2020. So now we're telling Facebook, I don't want anything before 2018. That's the first time that they put a temporal limitation on their request to Facebook. But they want more information. They want 18 different categories of data, including a much broader set of user activity, IP addresses, device identifier logs, and all location information associated with the accounts. Again here, the warrant asks Facebook to turn the information over to the government, but it then only allows the government to actually look through the data for information that constitutes fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of those sex trafficking offenses. And again, it's supported by a very extensive affidavit that again talks about this escaped child, the conspiracy, the depth of the conspiracy, the breadth of the conspiracy, that they had already searched these other Facebook accounts and found several perpetrators who had used the accounts to advance the criminal endeavors, including, you know, now we've got firearms involved, they're using drugs, they're using gang signs, so we're looking for lots of information to corroborate not just the sex trafficking, but the other violence that they're using to keep the scheme going, and the gang structure that's used to sustain this conspiracy. Then law enforcement gets a fourth search warrant, a fourth and final search warrant, and they authorize again. Now we're getting 22 Facebook accounts. And in this case, again, they put a time frame on it, which they hadn't done with the first two warrants. The time frame is going to be January 2018 up until the date the warrant is sworn out, which again, I think is around 2020. And again, we're looking for 18 types of information, a lot more information. And again, it's saying to Facebook, turn over everything. But when we get it, we're only going to be looking for evidence of these specific criminal violations, these particular sex trafficking violations. So again, they give these requests to the warrant. I think the fourth warrant is February 2020. And they are getting these warrants, getting this data back, searching it, finding this information, and ultimately indict the conspirators in this case. Several people plead guilty, but several people move to suppress. Ultimately, in this case, the defendants in this case move to suppress. Several of the defendants move to suppress the evidence gathered from the warrants. And they make three arguments. Okay, the first argument they make is there's no probable cause to issue these search warrants. You can imagine that argument doesn't go very far, but it's interesting. We'll talk about it. But the next two arguments they make are actually pretty important arguments, and they're going to be a lot of what we talk about today. Again, they appeal to the Fourth Amendment's requirement that you particularly describe the place to be searched, and particularly describe the persons or things to be seized. And so the first of these particular arguments they make is that the scope of the warrants should have included fewer categories of data. In other words, the government seized too many types of data and too much data from Facebook. That's the first argument they make. And the second argument they make is that the time frame of the warrants should have been limited to include only information during the trafficking of the escaped child instead of information before and after, right? That the time frame was too broad. And in fact, with the first two warrants, there is no time frame at all. The trial court denies the motions. They are found guilty at trial, and then they appeal. So the court has to address these arguments on appeal. Now let's start out with a very easy one, and that is the first search warrant. When the court looks at the first search warrant, they simply ask a basic question. Are any of these defendants in this case named in the first search warrant? And the answer is no. Well, because they're not, they don't have standing, what we call standing, to challenge that first search warrant. And so their motion to suppress on the first search warrant is denied. Now, I think this is interesting, just as an aside for you going forward, because it's important to note that under Fourth Amendment law, you have to have some privacy right in the thing being searched in order to be allowed to challenge that search. Now, that is true under the Fourth Amendment. It's interesting because there is a movement afoot to remove that requirement in statutory law. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, for example, under Virginia law, there are these search warrant requirements that the General Assembly enacted in 2020. They don't require you have a privacy interest in order to claim that a search warrant was unlawfully executed. Under the changes they made in 2020 and 2021 to the search warrant statute. So, for example, if you executed a search warrant on the victim's house and you violated that code section, it seems to be that you could still move to suppress under a claiming a statutory violation, even though it was the victim's house and not your house, right? That is something that's true, for example, in California under what they call their ECPA, their Electronic Communication Privacy Act. We don't have that in Virginia otherwise, though, when it comes to search warrants for Facebook and phones and so on. We still have an actual Fourth Amendment rule. We still follow the Fourth Amendment. So that's good, right? And so we don't really get an answer with regards to the first search warrant because the court says, well, it doesn't matter. It's not their information. But however, the court has to address the three other warrants that actually do get some of the defendant's data. And here, the court says, well, we still have to address, do they have a reasonable expectation of privacy? And you might pause for a second and say, well, you know I think of my Facebook account as private, but let's be honest here. Facebook is constantly buying and selling my information. I mean, the reason that Facebook is quote-unquote free is because we're not the customers of Facebook at all. We're the product. Facebook is bringing us in and essentially fattening us up and then selling us at market. Do I really have privacy in my Facebook information when clearly it's not actually treated as private by Facebook? Well, the court here says, kind of elides that question and says, look, it can't be the rule that government can access somebody's personal conversations and communications without having to get a search warrant of the Fourth Amendment. That just doesn't seem to make sense. I mean, we do use Facebook to have private conversations. We do use Facebook to store private information. Facebook does require warrants. It's got to have some protection of the Fourth Amendment. So the court says, we're going to assume that you have to get, we're going to say, yeah, you have to get a search warrant to get this information. Okay. So, again, I mentioned that the next argument that they had was that the warrants lacked probable cause. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because it's a pretty stupid argument. Obviously, the magistrates here had a substantial basis for concluding that the searches would uncover evidence of wrongdoing. The affidavits made very clear, and the magistrates reasonably determined, based on the information in the affidavits, there was a fair probability that evidence of the sex trafficking crimes would be found on these Facebook accounts. There was ample support for the determination that there's a sufficient nexus between the accounts and the sex trafficking to be seized. The government had done an excellent job of describing that. And again, note, probable cause doesn't mean more likely than not. Was it more likely than not that the Facebook data would have produced evidence of the conspiracy? Who cares? Doesn't matter. Probable cause doesn't mean more likely than not. It simply means a fair probability. So here again, that court rejects that argument. But let's dive into the real question here, which is the particularity here. Look at how much data Facebook turned over and the fact that there's no temporal limitation on two of the four warrants. Isn't that an issue? Well, here the court says, yes, the warrants compelled Facebook to turn over a wide swath of personal information, including all private communications, most user activity, and with the last two warrants, the third and fourth warrant, location information, all location information. But here the court said, okay, Facebook has to turn over all this information, but the government can only go through the data and pick out or go through the data and search for evidence of the suspected criminal offenses, here the sex trafficking offenses. And here the court makes an analogy to a case called U.S. versus Cobb, which we've talked about on this podcast before. But Cobb was an interesting case where it was a murder case. The government had the suspect's laptop. The government knew that the suspect had information about the murder on the laptop because he had told his dad, destroy the laptop. It's got information about the murder on it. So he told his dad, it's got information about the murder. We just don't know what the information was. So the government got a search warrant to search the laptop for information related to the murder, right? And that was it. That was, so what is that? Who knows? I don't know. I'm going to look through the search. I'm going to look through the laptop and see if I can find information about the murder. And the defendant moved to suppress. The Electronic Frontier Foundation and the ACLU all thought this was absolutely outrageous. The government could just search a laptop, or the entire laptop, for anything they wanted. And the court said, no, 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 they can't search for anything. They can only go through and look for evidence of something related to the homicide. And so they don't know what that's going to be until they find it, but it does permit them to go through you know, the entire laptop to find that evidence. And in this case, the court makes a really interesting analogy, which I think we, you know, we like to make, you know, we sort of think about search warrants for electronic devices, but I don't know that I've ever seen a court in the Fourth Circuit come right out and make this analogy. The court looks at this like a search of a house. And the court says, in a search of a house, right, you're going to find a lot of irrelevant materials. You're going to search through the entire house for, let's say it's a drug search warrant. You're going to find all sorts of things that aren't drugs, that aren't related to the drug offense. But in a house search, the reason why that complies with the Fourth Amendment requirement that of particularity is you have a warrant that only allows you to search and seize fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of that drug offense. So sure, you can look anywhere in that house that might have fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of drug offense, but you can only seize, take with you, the things that are going to actually be fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of drug offense. So if you are going through the house and you find, you know, lots of personal letters between the defendant and his wife, you might have to look through those to see if he says something like, and don't worry, honey, I'm bringing a lot of money from my drug dealing, so I'm going to be able to take us on a nice trip next year. Okay, you could take that, but, you know, letters saying, you know, I love you, and, you know, here's, you know, whatever, something, those things you can't take with you. That's what you could do in a house search. So the court makes an analogy here to Facebook. And the court makes a distinction that I think is interesting because of the way it uses words. The court here takes the words search and seizure and uses them in a way that I don't think we use the word this way, but the court thinks these are important. The court makes a distinction between what can be searched and what can be seized. And so the court uses the word search to refer to when the government goes to Facebook and says, turn over all of the data in these accounts, everything. Or turn over all the data in the accounts from 2018 to 2020, or just turn over everything to me. The court calls that a search because the Facebook is turning all that information over to the government. And then the court says, then the search warrant limits what you can seize. So the seizure process is where you actually seize or copy the medium and then review it to determine what actually falls within the scope of the warrant. And that's the seizure process. So it's a two-step process, right? Search, where the warrant compels the provider, like Facebook, to produce a broad weight of information, and seizure, where the warrant actually authorizes seizure of evidence of drug distribution, or in this case, evidence of sex trafficking. And the court says that that is a lawful procedure, and that was the reason why it was okay for the government to engage in this wide-ranging, and again, they use the word search. I think of it kind of as, and it's confusing for me because I think of it as a seizure, right? They're grabbing the data from Facebook and bringing it in. So I feel like that's the seizure. And then when you look through the data, that's the search. But the court uses the terms in the opposite way. They say search is where you grab all the data from Facebook, and then seizure is where you go through the data and pull it out. And that seems weird, right? I mean, I don't know if you're like me, but I think that's backwards. But the reason I think they're using the terms that way is because of that house analogy, right? Because in the house, you're searching the entire house, right? You're going from the basement to the, you know, to the attic, everywhere in the house. You're looking through the whole house, but you're only seizing the things that are a violation of the offense. That's why they're using the words, I think that's why they're using the words in this funny way, because otherwise we would think it's weird, right? So the court here writes, the distinction between what can be searched and what can be seized counsels the government to execute social media warrants through a two-step process. And it's interesting because, right, we talk about, you know, Google geofence warrants being done in a three-step process. Here, the process, here the court writes, this process whereby the government first obtains a large amount of data and then seizes only, that is to say, look through it and only takes out the fruits, evidence, or instrumentalities of enumerated crimes, is crucial to the validity of social media warrants. And that's pretty strong language, right? The court's basically saying, to be valid, a social media warrant almost basically needs to be written this way. So here, they're saying the warrant should permit officers, in searching electronically stored information pursuant to a warrant, to seize or copy the entire storage medium, and then review it later to determine what electronically stored information falls within the scope of the warrant. And they reason that this two-step process makes sure that the government executes the warrant in a reasonable manner. Here, the district court has the authority, you know, for example, to say the government's held the information too long. And there are courts, by the way, in the Fourth Circuit in Maryland, for example, that found that a government, you know, searching data 2 years after it seized it, that was not reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And so this again is an analogy to, you know, seizing and holding onto property too long, right? You can't hold on property forever. You have to eventually turn property back over to people. But the court here looks at this and they say, look, this affidavit makes clear this conspiracy is using Facebook extensively to communicate with co-conspirators, victims, and customers in furtherance of this conspiracy. And so it does not violate the Fourth Amendment to obtain such detailed information. When you have such, you know, the court here writes, the sheer magnitude of this sex trafficking conspiracy justifies a concomitant breadth in the scope of the warrants, particularly as the seizures they authorized were limited to the evidence of the specific offenses for which probable cause existed. Okay, so now what about the time frame, right? Yeah, a temporal limitation can limit how much information you seize, and the last two warrants, the 2018 warrant, excuse me, the third and fourth warrant limit their time frame to 2018 until 2020, till very beginning of 2020. Well, the court here says this child was sexually abused for a very long time. The escaped child's abuse was part of a broader sex trafficking conspiracy involving multiple children before and after the child's abuse begins. Each affidavit explains how gang members involved in a sex trafficking conspiracy often use social media to discuss the conspiracy before, during, and after its execution. Multiple defendants continue to use Facebook to message the child herself after she was rescued by law enforcement at the end of 2018. And it was appropriate for the magistrates to infer that the targeted gang members were engaged in an extensive, ongoing interstate criminal enterprise of uncertain beginnings. So the court here emphasizes search warrants relating to more complex and far-reaching criminal schemes can be deemed legally sufficient, even though they are less particular than warrants pertaining to some of more straightforward criminal cases. The second warrant didn't have a practical temporal limitation, a time frame limitation on it. But the court here says we're not going to require a time frame in every single social media search warrant because we don't know what the facts of all these cases are going to be. Here, in this particular case, the court dodges the question ultimately and says, you know what? The officer gave a search warrant to the magistrate issued the search warrant. You're supposed to use their search warrant process. We're just going to say it's good faith. And we're not going to answer the question of whether or not the search warrant should have had a time frame limitation on it. Do you have to have a time frame? No. But the court says future warrants will enhance their claims to particularity by requesting data from only the period of time during which the defendant was suspected of taking part in the criminal conspiracy. They are not, and the court says, we do not greenlight all warrants for and searches of social media data, right? The court here warns if you want your search warrant to be as strong as it can be, the putting a time frame can be really powerful. It may not be necessary, but it may be very powerful. And especially if you don't have a wide-ranging conspiracy, if you just have a robbery at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on, you know, at 500 Main Street, there, I think the court's saying you need to have some kind of time frame. You need to explain, okay, here's where I want the information to start when I ask the social media company to turn the information over to me. The court here is really struggling, and that when they end the case, they write, "We cannot read the Fourth Amendment to allow indiscriminate search of many years of intimate communications. And because of the internet connectedness of social media, permitting unbridled rummaging through any one user's account can reveal an extraordinary amount of personal information about individuals involved in criminal activity. It is not only courts that are struggling to strike a balance between privacy and security in the rapidly changing digital domain, but society as a whole. When criminal offenders use social media to organize their enterprises and evade detection, it would seem unreasonable to disable law enforcement from using those same media to apprehend and prosecute them. And to hold otherwise would arbitrarily tip the scales away from law and justice for the benefit of increasingly sophisticated criminal schemes. But at the same time, there comes a point when the Fourth Amendment must emphatically yell stop. And they actually wrote stop in all capital letters, lest we render obsolete the hallowed notion of a secure enclave for personal affairs. So what's the takeaway? Number one, if you can put a time frame in your warrant, you should. The court seems to say searches, especially for social media data, it's good to put a time frame. It may not be possible, and they're not going to say it's required, but it's really powerful. Number two, if you have a wide-ranging conspiracy, explain how the conspiracy is ongoing. That's going to be extremely important if you're going to describe why it is you're seizing so much information. But three, we're starting to see this idea of this two-step seizure process where the court is saying, yeah, you can grab all this data, but then only search it for evidence of particular crimes, and that's their preferred way of doing things. But again, if your warrant specifically says, I'm only looking for evidence of robbery, or I'm only looking for evidence of sex trafficking, I'm looking for evidence of drug distribution, that is ultimately the thing that properly limits our search and makes us compliant with the Fourth Amendment, the fact that we're only allowed to look for evidence of particular crimes, which is the same way that we've searched houses for decades. So, really interesting case today. I hope you found today was interesting, and I hope that this helps you write your search warrants for the future. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. We're on SoundCloud, Stitcher Podcasts, a bunch of other podcast apps. I will try to get us on Spotify. If you don't like the podcast, don't tell your friends. From today, that's all from me, that's all from Big E. Stay safe, and don't get captured.